We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And away we go, episode 810 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Monday, April 22nd, 2024. It is Earth Day 2024. And what on earth is going on with LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels and the Commanders? So much chatter in recent days, but has any of it truly been significant, or has all of it simply been a sign of, hey, we need this 2024 NFL draft to finally happen? Hello and welcome to this Monday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. We have arrived at the week of the 2024 NFL draft, in which the Washington Commanders have the number 2 overall pick. Next segment, I'm going to welcome a regular guest back to the podcast, Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic, and we are going to discuss what the heck is going on between the Commanders and Jaden Daniels. And the answer may be that nothing is going on, that all of this stuff is just empty calories. But what is undeniable is that there in recent days has been a lot of stuff. Next segment, we'll detail the stuff and then bring Ben onto the show for his assessment of what's happening here. And we will do a lot of preview of the Commanders 2024 draft, what is to me the most important draft in franchise history. Massive week for Commanders general manager Adam Peters and his staff. Also on the show, discussion and analysis of the rest of our Washington, D.C. area sports weekend. I will talk Capitals, a very disappointing game one for the Caps in their first round series against the New York Rangers in the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs, a 4-1 loss on Sunday afternoon. I'll review what happened. I will talk Nationals, who won 2 of 3 games against the Houston Astros at Nationals Park over the weekend, including a 6-0 win on Sunday afternoon as Mitchell Parker, in just his second career Major League regular season start, tossed 7 scoreless innings with 8 strikeouts versus no walks. And I will talk Orioles, who won 2 of 3 games at the Kansas City Royals over the weekend, including a 5-0 win on Sunday afternoon. Cole Irvin, 6 2/3 scoreless innings, and 2 more impressive home runs for the O's, who for this regular season are number 1 in the majors with 33 home runs. Before we get to some feedback, some Wizards news. On Friday, ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski and ESPN senior NBA writer Zach Lowe, they on Friday afternoon reported that the Wizards this past Thursday let go of a number of staff members, but also that interim head coach Brian Keefe and assistant coach David Vanterpool remain with the Wizards, and that Keefe is a candidate for the full-time job of Wizards head coach, as he should be. Keefe actually did a decent job as Wizards interim head coach, all things considered, and players had good things to say about him. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Stanley Evans on the week of the 2024 NFL draft finally having arrived, especially for two quarterback-starved franchises. Right, Stanley? Happy draft week, Goldie. We'll finally be able to put all of this chaos to rest shortly. LOL. I saw a graphic that showed every NFL team's last quarterback who had 30 touchdown passes. Would you believe that the last quarterback with 30 touchdown passes for Washington was Sonny Jurgensen, and Chicago has zero? The irony is that the two franchises with the worst quarterback luck, Chicago and Washington, are selecting 1-2 with the hopes of finally finding true franchise quarterbacks. Is this the year that the curse for each team is finally broken? Thank you for the email, Stanley. I did see that graphic on X. The graphic was in a post from the 33rd team, and the graphic was of each NFL team's last quarterback to have at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season. Sonny Jurgensen is not only the last Washington quarterback to have at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season, he is the only Washington quarterback to ever have at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season. Our team in its history has a mere one instance of a quarterback having at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season. Sonny Jurgensen's 1967 regular season, which was a 14-game regular season. But Sonny, for the 1967 regular season, had 31 touchdown passes. Joe Theismann, for the 1983 regular season, had 29 touchdown passes. You know who, for the 2015 regular season, had 29 touchdown passes, but Sonny's 1967 regular season remains the only instance of a Washington quarterback having at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season. That is such a pathetic reality for our football team. Understand, multiple quarterbacks each have at least 30 touchdown passes every regular season. The 2023 regular season, four quarterbacks each had at least 30 touchdown passes. The 2022 regular season, four quarterbacks each had at least 30 touchdown passes. The 2021 regular season, nine quarterbacks each had at least 30 touchdown passes. The 2020 regular season, 10 quarterbacks each had at least 30 touchdown passes. And yet, Sonny Jurgensen's 1967 regular season remains the only instance of a Washington quarterback having at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season. I have played as a drop the classic laugh of legendary former Redskins head coach Joe Gibbs. Well, Sonny has a great laugh. Here is a Sonny laugh from a radio broadcast years ago. Yeah, that is the Sonny Jurgensen laugh, and he must laugh at, still, all of these years later, having the only instance of a Washington quarterback having at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season. Exactly. And yes, the Chicago Bears have never had a quarterback have at least 30 touchdown passes in a regular season. Email from Ryan in Winchester, Virginia, on why the Commanders traded quarterback Sam Howell. Writes Ryan, "Hello, Al. Thank you for consistently putting together quality content. It is clear that you put a lot of time and effort into your podcast, and it shows." Well, thank you for that, Ryan. Continues Ryan, "On a recent episode of the podcast, you were discussing your opinion that the Commanders should have kept Sam Howell, and your guest agreed, as do I, which got me thinking. Adam Peters is, by all accounts, very good at his job. He knows how important the quarterback position is in the NFL, so why would he trade Howell? Could it be that Peters is targeting Drake May and wanted to avoid any friction in the quarterback room and on the team? We could easily dismiss this, but NFL players are people just like the rest of us, with emotions and feelings, likes and dislikes. I know that Howell and May were seen at a UNC basketball game together, but they weren't all smiles. Maybe this is nothing, but at least it is food for thought. Thanks again, and keep up the good work. Well, thank you very much for that, Ryan. The guest who Ryan was referring to is Pro Football Focus NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. He was on not one but two episodes of the podcast last week for a two-part conversation. And Trevor, in part two, which was on last Thursday's show, episode 808, explained why the Commanders traded Sam Howell. And the explanation basically was NFL teams like for things to be nice and clean and orderly, and having a young quarterback with starter potential in Sam Howell might be disruptive in some way for whomever the Commanders take via their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft, or even for just the team. But Trevor conceded that my line of thinking made sense. And my line of thinking is Sam Howell still has upside, and until the Commanders truly have quarterback figured out, they should be retaining and developing as many quarterbacks with upside as realistically possible. But I don't see the Commanders having traded Sam Howell as necessarily being only for Drake May, given that May and Howell were together on North Carolina. I see that also as being for Jaden Daniels or any other quarterback. And I don't agree with trading a quarterback who has upside simply out of fear of things potentially being a little uncomfortable. This is big-time professional sports. Things are constantly uncomfortable, okay? People need to get over that stuff. And if you as an athlete can't get over that stuff, then maybe you're not the guy to begin with. But look, it is entirely possible that Adam Peters traded Sam Howell because Peters just doesn't think that Howell is good or will ever be good. I mean, Howell's play cratered as this past season went on. Perhaps Peters found that to be very telling. And Drake May and Sam Howell are good friends. That is well documented. Each guy has talked about that. And a good friend of this podcast is the great law firm of Paulson and Nace. Paulson and Nace, it is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm dedicated to promoting the rights of seriously injured persons and their families. Paulson and Nace handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. If you have been harmed by the negligence of someone else, if someone who you care about has been harmed by the negligence of someone else, call Paulson and Nace at 202-902-7611. And when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace was named as part of U.S. News and World Report's Best Law Firms 2024 edition. And Chris Nace and Matt Nace specifically are dedicated and decorated trial attorneys. Chris Nace, last May, was named the 2023 Barry J. Nace Trial Lawyer of the Year, this by the D.C. Trial Lawyers Association. Chris, last July, was elected as the Parliamentarian of the American Association for Justice, and both Chris and Matt Nace last August were recognized by Best Lawyers in America for 2024. And Samantha Peters of Paulson and Nace has been recognized as a Super Lawyers Rising Star and has been recognized by the National Trial Lawyers Top 40 Under 40. Why the accolades? Well, Paulson and Nace fights for you. Paulson and Nace has secured millions of dollars in verdict and settlement amounts for clients to better enable them to care for themselves and their families. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Call Paulson and Nace at 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. When you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. Just make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, if you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Hey, thank you to all of you who have given this podcast a 5-star rating and who have written nice reviews of the podcast. You on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify can rate the podcast. 5-star ratings are very much appreciated, and you on Apple Podcasts can write a review saying that you like the podcast. The review does not have to be long, can be just a sentence or two, but the ratings and the reviews help us out a lot. So thank you very much for doing them. What happened regarding LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels last week was perhaps the ultimate sign that we desperately need this 2024 NFL draft to happen. We need the Commanders quarterback decision via their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 draft to happen. We need this Thursday night, during which the first round of the 2024 draft will take place, to happen. We officially have reached the point of absurdity. Although that doesn't mean that what happened regarding Daniels last week may not have been significant. So this all started with the Commanders last Tuesday and Wednesday conducting their final batch of pre-draft visits for the 2024 NFL draft in a group manner, right? As the team hosted around 20 prospects, including 4 of the perceived top quarterbacks in the 2024 draft in Jaden Daniels, North Carolina's Drake May, Michigan's J.J. McCarthy, and Washington's Michael Penix Jr. The group-style pre-draft visits included the Commanders taking the prospects to Topgolf, which over the last few days has gotten more publicity than any advertising campaign could have ever generated. But then came one of Jaden Daniels' agents, Ron Butler, seemingly expressing unhappiness with the group-style pre-draft visits. Butler on X liked a post from a Commanders fan who ripped the Commanders for doing their last batch of pre-draft visits in this group-setting manner. And Butler on X reposted a video of notorious Washington hater Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio and NBC Sports NFL analyst Chris Sims ripping the Commanders for doing their last batch of pre-draft visits in this group-setting manner. And Butler did this with a thinking face emoji, as if to say, that makes sense. And then ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter, in an appearance on the Pat McAfee show this past Friday afternoon, said that, quote, from the outset, Jaden Daniels has had an interest in being other places, end quote. However, Schefter, in an appearance on ESPN's SportsCenter this past Friday evening, said that, quote, right now, Jaden Daniels is prepared to go wherever he is drafted, end quote. As clearly someone from Daniels' camp got to Schefter for the purpose of damage control. And sure enough, Denise White, a public relations representative for Daniels, she this past Friday evening on X reposted a portion of Schefter's appearance on SportsCenter, a portion in which he said that Daniels knows that he has to go to whichever team drafts him. Also, Fox Sports NFC East insider Ralph Vacchiano, he in a post on X this past Saturday afternoon said, quote, I don't know if QB Jaden Daniels wants to play for the Commanders or would prefer another team, but the flap about his agent being unhappy about the group QB visit to Washington is a bit overblown. The two sides have talked since, per sources, and settled any issues, end quote. Additionally, as if all of that isn't enough, additionally, Adam Schefter, in that aforementioned appearance on the Pat McAfee show this past Friday afternoon, admitted something that I had felt all along, that he was kidding when he, in an appearance on the Trap or Drive podcast, in an episode that came out on April 12th, said for Commanders fans to buy Jaden Daniels jerseys. I had not even mentioned Schefter having made the buy the jerseys comment because I thought that it pretty clearly was said in jest. But so many people made such a big deal about Schefter having said that. Now, Schefter for weeks has said that signs point toward the Commanders taking Daniels with their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 draft, but Schefter has never flat out reported that the Commanders are taking Daniels with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. There is a big difference between saying that signs point to something versus saying that something is going to happen. Here are the two key audio clips of Adam Schefter from this past Friday. This was Schefter on the Pat McAfee Show.
You tell the Trapper Dive podcast, you guys can buy your Jaden Daniels jerseys.
But hold on. Can I correct something? That's completely taken out of context.
Okay.
That comment.
Okay.
Okay. Completely taken out of context.
Okay.
Okay. Let me say, I was on that podcast for, I don't know, 20 minutes, a half hour, and I couldn't have been more clear saying over and over that the signs point to Jaden Daniels at two. It's tracking towards Jaden Daniels, but there's no decision. At the end of the whole podcast, as they're getting off, we're going to see Jaden Daniels? I'm like, yeah, go buy your Jaden Daniels jersey. Okay. And now that's a report.
Yeah.
Like, then I told people to buy their Jaden. Like, that's not what I reported. I reported it's tracking towards Jaden Daniels, which it has been.
Okay.
The signs point to Jaden Daniels, which they do.
Okay.
And the Commanders are going through it after this week when, again, I think it's a situation where, from the outset, Jaden Daniels had an interest in being other places.
Mm-hmm.
He just has. Now the interest is, okay, what do the Commanders do about that? Do they... Like, there have been plenty of players who have wanted to play elsewhere, and the teams don't care, and they just do what they do. Or, if there's a team that wants him, i.e., a team that used to essentially have a coach that worked them in college, like, then they have to trade for him. So, what do they want to do?
All right, so that was Adam Schefter on the Pat McAfee Show this past Friday afternoon. Then, like I said, someone from Jaden Daniels' camp pretty clearly got to Schefter. And so this was Schefter on ESPN's SportsCenter with anchor Kevin Nagandi this past Friday evening.
What's the latest you're hearing on Washington's plans with that number two pick?
And I think part of that comes from the fact that when Jaden Daniels visited there this past week, it was with a group of quarterbacks, four quarterbacks. And I think he thought that he was going to get more FaceTime there than he actually did, Kevin. It didn't work out exactly that way. But Jaden Daniels also knows that he can't control where he goes in this draft, and his opinion doesn't matter where he wants to go. It's all up to the team. And right now, Jaden Daniels is prepared to go wherever he's drafted. Most people still believe it continues to be number two to the Washington Commanders. That still looks to be the favorite spot. But because of some speculation this past week, people wondering whether he would go, whether they would take him, the fact of the matter is Jaden Daniels knows he's not a free agent here. He has to go where he's drafted. And if it does turn out to be Washington, as a lot of people still believe, he's prepared to go to Washington and be a Commander and try to be the face of the franchise that many coaches believe he will be.
Okay, so a lot of noise regarding Jaden Daniels these last few days. But what, if anything, does it all mean? I'm very pleased to welcome back to the Al Galdi podcast a man who is quite familiar with noise pertaining to our football team, Commanders insider Ben Standig of The Athletic. Ben does an awesome job of covering the Commanders. He is the host of the Standig Room Only podcast. You could follow him on X at Ben Standig. Ben, my friend, are you ready for the pre-draft process to be over?
Boy, I couldn't begin to tell you how ready I am. You know what, man? It is becoming eerily similar to the coaching search situation. And this is what I was fearing a few weeks ago. And because of the fact that, like, we're really not hearing anything out of the organization when there's still inches to file in papers and hours of radio and podcasts to discuss. So some people are going to come up with anything or take everything and make it a blow it up. And based on that's happening, yes, please get me to the 25th already.
Well, we're almost there, but we're not there yet. And that is the challenge. So I want to leave this open-ended for you. All of the Jaden Daniels stuff from this past Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, was any of this stuff meaningful in your opinion?
At the moment, I would say no. You know, first off, like, you know, give me one thing that's been out there that's a concrete anything. Like, even like when if we're all sort of going off of like what Adam Schefter is saying, you tell me, did he use the word sources say, or the, sorry, it's two words, sources say one time? And the answer is no. I always have a general theory that if somebody's like a national reporter is reporting something, I'm air quoting that, is reporting something, either one of two things will happen. One, they will tweet it more than they will say it on television, because the tweet is their property. The television is not theirs, and it's not as instantaneous. Two, they will write about it because they all work for websites that want the clicks. If one or both of those things do not happen, do not take it as a report. I mean, you know, if they say it literally on TV, sources say, but in general, that's how this works. He didn't do any of that. He, you know, he came on my podcast 10 days ago, said, hey, he thinks Jaden Daniels it too, but he's not going. He said, like, I'm not hearing this from the team. I'm just putting the pieces together, which I will say parenthetically is what I've been doing for the last month or so, and have stuck on Daniels as well. And there's no sourcing. Every single time, I know you look at all the mock drafts and hear every single entry says this, whether it's Jaden Daniels or Drake May or whatever, yada, yada, yada. Here's why he's good, but it's very hard to tell what Washington is doing because they've been quiet. So almost none of this means anything to me at this point. The only thing I would wonder would be is if we reach a point where Jaden Daniels says flat out to somebody, hey, I don't want to go to Washington. If we get to that point, then there's a story. But until then, it doesn't mean anything. And by the way, the agent can say whatever he wants. This isn't free agency. This is the draft. If they want to take Jaden Daniels, they would. Obviously, I don't think they would do it if they sense hostility. But beyond that, I don't take much of this to mean anything.
Have you heard, as others have, that Jaden Daniels would prefer to go elsewhere in the draft?
I mean, I can't say I've heard it directly, but obviously the Antonio Pierce stuff, because Antonio Pierce recruited him to go to Arizona State and was there for a bit before, you know, that whole situation blew up and he went to the Raiders. You know, I talked to Pierce at the owners meeting and, you know, just asked him about Daniels, and he's, you know, did he think he was going to win the Heisman? He said, yeah, of course. That's why when we recruited him, I told him that he can win the Heisman. You know, my point is just to say that, yeah, there's a connection there. This isn't just, hey, it's great to meet you. We've really enjoyed meeting you over the last 3 months. Do you want to come play for my team? So I get that. But beyond that, like, oh, no, I don't want to go for Washington. I saw the agents, emoji. You know, I've talked to some people about this. I don't know. At the moment, I don't get it. But again, there's reminders here of the Ben Johnson situation. It's going to be Ben Johnson. It's going to be Ben Johnson. And then he doesn't even like want to talk to them. Now, he could do that because he's not in the coaching draft. But beyond that, I don't know.
You mentioned the now infamous thinking face emoji from Jaden Daniels' agent, Ron Butler. It is his behavior on X that ignited everything. You are as connected to NFL agents as anyone on the Commanders beat. Why would the agent spout off in any way, especially on X? He's the agent. He's supposed to be the adult. He's employed by his client not to be seen or heard. Why would this guy, Ron Butler, have liked a post from a Commanders fan and reposted that video ripping the Commanders? That seems like such a lack of discipline and such an unforced error by the agent.
It is odd, you know. It's interesting watching the agent community because you have these, you know, massive agencies, your CAAs, your athletes firsts, what have you. And typically, I don't know the exact percentage, but that is where the vast majority of the bigger name free draft choices go. You know, Drake May is with one of those firms. JJ McCarthy is with one of those firms. You know, Caleb Williams is not with any agent. But that's how it typically goes. Now, it's interesting that, like, when Lamar Jackson, who doesn't have an agent, a lot of weird chaos kind of went on, you know, goes on with him over time, especially before he signed his contract in that regard. Here, Butler has been an agent for a while. He represents Derek Forrest. He may have bigger names than that. I just know that he represents Derek Forrest locally. But he's not with one of those like massive firms, you know, one of the smaller ones. And I don't know. Sometimes is it a matter of, you know, you just haven't had like anything else in life. You haven't had that type of experience. Are you trying to use this? Hey, I got Jaden Daniels here as, you know, this is a huge deal for me, right? To you know, for our firm, for me, maybe I need to get myself out there more. Maybe there's genuine, I guess like one aspect is I would wonder is, does, like, I did have the sense that they were not aware that they were, the other quarterbacks were going to be there. That, like we all assumed, right? That this 30 visit was, oh, Jaden Daniels will come in one day. Drake May was coming in. Like when I was hearing that they were coming in, that's kind of what I was assuming. So maybe they were thrown off because they didn't know. And if they didn't know, is that maybe that's a mistake? You know, maybe it's not so much a mistake to have everybody show up because Adam Peters has done this before, but maybe, I don't know. Should they have given them more of a heads up? Hey, just FYI, here's how we're doing this. We're bringing in everybody. I just want to be clear on that. We're not, you know, I don't know. At the same time, you know, does Washington need to cater to these to a prospect to this degree? It depends how you view, you know, this whole, you know, the beginning of this relationship and where you want things to go. So I don't know. I don't know what his motivations were, but those are some of the things I can think of.
Yeah, and I also wonder if part of the point of the Commanders doing these pre-draft visits in a group setting was to not tell the prospects about the group setting and see how the prospects reacted to the group setting. Pro Football Focus lead NFL analyst Sam Monson has referred to what the Commanders did as an alpha test. And so if Jaden Daniels was turned off by the group setting pre-draft visit, and that's an if, but if he was, then to me, the alpha test did exactly what it was supposed to do. It exposed a non-alpha.
Yeah, no, I you know, somebody was asking me, did I not think, like, don't I think it's reasonable to say that having 15 to 20 prospects come in when they're all cornerbacks or linemen or running backs or whatever is one thing, and four, and one involving four quarterbacks that are going to be potential first round picks and all that stuff is another. And I'm like, it could be a big mistake. But here's my thing. I don't know what their hopes and dreams are. You know, as much as I eventually began to criticize Scott Brooks with the Wizards and Ron Rivera here, when they arrived, I was like, all right, let me see. I don't assume anything. I used this analogy the other day. It's like in college basketball recruiting. I hear all the time, like it's typically the recruiting buzz when somebody is like a legitimate like NBA lottery pick is typically fair. Like maybe they don't become the an 8-time all-star, but they're like a legit player. But when I hear about these 4-stars, like or like a Diamond Stone or a Shaq Clear who went to Maryland and some guys who went to Georgetown and Ryan Mutombo, and everybody's like, oh boy, here we go, 4-star. I'm like, okay, cool. I don't believe anything until I see it. Let me see it. And then you see it and you're like, oh no. I saw Shaq Clear at a open practice nothing before the season, 10 minutes in. I was like, well, this guy's no good, relatively speaking to the hype. So same thing here. That's a negative. Let me see it going the other way too. I don't know. Maybe this is the best thing. Peters, it did come from an organization that's been pretty good. I don't know. I mean, and I guess the other thing is, tell me what's the better system. Tell me the one that has the 80% hit rate. This quarterback scouting evaluation is impossible. So the idea that like one would be worse than the other, let me see. So maybe the test works exactly where they wanted it. Maybe it blew up in their face. I don't know yet, but I'm willing to let it play out before I go, wow, they really screwed this up.
Along the lines of what you were just talking about, the Commanders are far from the only NFL team to conduct pre-draft visits in a group setting. The San Francisco 49ers did this during Commanders general manager Adam Peters' time as a Niners executive. The New England Patriots with Bill Belichick as head coach did this. He said this in an appearance on the Pat McAfee show this past Wednesday afternoon. You talk to a lot of agents and people in the NFL. Have you spoken with anyone who had a problem with the Commanders doing their last batch of pre-draft visits in a group setting manner?
You know, they had already done this group thing earlier the previous week, but it just wasn't with the quarter with four quarterbacks, so people didn't care, or it just didn't get out there as much. I talked to agents for at least four players who went, not necessarily saying quarterbacks, but and when, you know, it was like, hey, so what, you know, what they think? They're like, oh, my guy loved it, had a great time, really liked the vibe, what have you. Now, obviously, you know, some of the people who were there were, you know, fifth round picks or, you know, potential, like those types. So, and some, you know, that I spoke to were guys who were, you know, we'll probably hear, you know, on or around day one. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's only to a certain extent, it's only because we're making a bigger deal out of it than it seems like it's a bigger deal. Now, again, in the case of Jaden Daniels, you know, I mean, you know, what's interesting, right, is like, if you're Drake May, right, let's just put aside McCarthy and Penix. Is Drake May arriving there going, all right, well, I'll go play some golf and then I'll just go get ready to go to move to New England? Or does he think, hey, I'm here too. And then he's not complaining as far as we know about this, right? So what is, you know, what does that say? Maybe nothing, but what does that say about all this? So it's possible the test did work as intended, but again, that's why I don't get too worked about this, because I don't know all the details yet, not even close.
None of us do, but you raise a point that I've wondered about too. Whatever is and isn't true about Jaden Daniels with the Commanders, there over the last few days has been a lot of noise with Daniels, and there has been zero noise with Drake May. And I do wonder if that discrepancy is weighing into the Commanders' quarterback decision with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. Like, you can say, well, whatever issues there were perceived to have been between the Commanders and Daniels have been cleared up. Okay, fine. But there have never been any perceived issues between the Commanders and May. Much more with Ben Standing in moments. Coming up, I'm going to ask Ben about potential trades, potential deals for the Commanders in the 2024 draft. But Nova Fireplace and Stove right now is offering multiple great deals for listeners of the Al Galdi podcast who live in Northern Virginia. Deal number one, $25 off any gas fireplace service, chimney cleaning, or chimney inspection. There's no need to go into next heating season unprepared. Get prepared now and at a discounted price. And deal number two, a Commander's draft special for those of you with masonry fireplaces. An in-stock wood insert for the extremely discounted price of just $5,300. The usual price is $9,000. And that price of $5,300 includes installation, permit, and county/city inspection. There are just two in-stock wood inserts left. So call now to get yours. Call 571-513-3803. Talk to Stuart Moore. He is the general manager. He's a big Commanders fan. He is a loyal listener of this podcast. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the special offers. Nova Fireplace and Stove is outstanding. It is family-owned. It is a five-star dealer. Nova Fireplace and Stove also installs generators, water heaters, security lights, and custom outdoor kitchens. There is so much that Nova Fireplace and Stove can do for you. Visit NovaFireplaceAndStove.com to check out customer reviews. Contact Nova Fireplace and Stove and get the customer service that you deserve. 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the special offers. That's Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. More now with Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic. When we last spoke, I asked you about Adam Peters on March 25th in his session with you and other reporters at the NFL's annual league meeting, which took place in Orlando, Florida, indicating that the team is not trading interior defensive lineman Jonathan Allen. And you pointed out that Peters technically only said, quote, "We are not interested in trading him," end quote. Well, Peters, in his joint pre-draft press conference with assistant general manager Lance Newmark this past Thursday afternoon, said of potentially trading down in the first round of the 2024 draft, quote, "We feel great about staying at number two. I don't see a whole lot of scenarios where we trade down, to be honest with you," end quote. There were those who took that as Peter saying that he's not trading down in the first round, but technically, that's not what he said. So do you take what he said as, hey, he's not wanting to trade down, or that he's simply trying to drive up the trade price for that number two overall pick?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, he technically didn't say, yeah, we're definitely not trading. But in this case, I don't view that as wiggle. I view that as wiggle, as like accepting that nothing in life is 100%, right? I mean, he can't anticipate the Raiders saying, okay, fine, we'll give you three firsts, 3 seconds, Davante Adams, and a piece of the Luxor. Like, I don't, you know, I don't know what the deals would be. But yeah, I took it as a pretty, hey, yeah, we're good here. Whereas like the Jonathan Allen thing, like, you know, that's, again, all of this is trying to do as best we can figure out what is happening. So yeah, I took the Allen thing more of like, yeah, sure, we're looking forward to it. But in the same way they said nice things about Sam Howell before trading him, whereas here I'm like, you know, that would be a lot. Like, are you really going to tease your fan base by saying we're good at two and then trade out? But, you know, I don't know. So. Yeah, I don't take it as I take it as they like one of these guys and we'll take one of these guys at two, barring an alien landing that says, hey, you know, to save the world, you got to trade out of two, send him to the Raiders for 3 1s or something.
The Commanders may not be trading down in the first round of the 2024 draft, but what about trading back into the first round, given the team's 2 second-round picks and 3 third-round picks?
Ow. So, you know, I, part of my, issue in life is that, like, I am a classic overthinker. I've had many women tell me that. and also, like, I really do try to get to the best scenario possible with these mock drafts, which is obviously ridiculous because it's just not conceivable. So I have been going with the idea that trading up is what they should be doing, right? Because you got to protect your prospect here and you have the extra picks. So why not go take advantage of it? Here's where I've been coming though lately. So this is an interesting tackle class. First of all, and you can tell me, cause I know you keep track of this. Tell me if I'm missing something here. In terms of 30 visits, the highest ranked, let's just say Jordan Morgan from Arizona is a tackle. Some people think he's a guard. I think he's the highest rated tackle or offensive lineman they have brought in for a 30. Now, you know, I'm not saying that combine visits or Senior Bowl meetings or whatever are not interesting, but 30 is sort of the end all be all of where this thing is going. And, you know, you don't have to bring a guy in to draft him, right? They didn't bring Jahan Dotson in a couple of years ago, all that stuff. But it does seem like there's a history of that with Peters. They didn't bring in anybody, as far as I know, over Jordan Morgan, who they may not even see as a tackle. They've been viewing a lot of the tackles they have been viewing. And day two is kind of a little bit weak, especially in the second round, but it's been those guys in that general range. Roger Rosengarten from Washington. I'm going to butcher up with the kid from Yale. There's another tackle from TCU and some others. So I'm not saying that means, okay, well, they're definitely waiting on tackle. Or not moving up. But you tell me, isn't the whole point that everybody's making is there is assumption that you move up to take a tackle who then becomes the starting left tackle, right? Isn't that the fair assumption?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so then you look, Tyler Guyton, who is typically of the top like 6 or 7 tackles, is typically like the last one, unless you think Morgan's a tackle, that will be there in the first round based on the way mock drafts have gone. He has started 15 games in his career. If I read my guy, Dane Brugler, if I read Daniel Jeremiah, or I read Eric Edholm, also from my NFL Network, I tweeted about this yesterday. All of them in their analysis say some version of this guy might need to wait, that he's not really there. Amarius Mims, you know, he's considered the guy, the next name on the list. Pretty good prospect. He started 8 games in college. So are they trading up? Is the plan, in theory, that we're all assessing, that they're going to trade up for a player who's he's way more inexperienced than we're even saying these quarterbacks are, that some of them, right? Are we saying that they're going to trade up for these guys and then put that risk while that tackle is learning out there? I don't know. Does that make sense? So if it gets to the point where it's like, okay, well, maybe at some point they play, okay, well, then does it make sense to trade up when it's possible Cornelius Lucas or whatever else they do ends up being the plan, rather than waiting till next year when, you know, I'm going on the assumption that there'll be a team that has a top 10 pick, most likely would be my guess, to use those assets to then get that left tackle now that you have the quarterback. So, I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day. I don't know that you need to force it. But hey, look, if they think Guyton or Mims is the next Chris Samuel or whatever, okay, I mean, sure. But, like, in terms of 2024, I'm not sure that I'm risking one of those guys. I just feel like that's been the general assumption. So I'm a little more now on team trade down at 36 as opposed to trade up. 36 is also a terrible, terrible mock draft spot for this team. I don't know what I'm doing if they stay put. That's a whole other story. So, yeah, I don't know. I understand why they would trade up, but I'm just saying if the assumption is that guy's going to start, I think we have to really question that.
You make a really good point. And to your point, the Commanders, while they have 5 picks on day 2 of the 2024 draft, the team only has 3 picks on day 3 of the draft, 2 fifth-round picks and a 7th-round pick. The Commanders do not have a 2024 fourth-round pick or a 2024 6th-round pick. Might we be sleeping on the possibility of the team, via its 5 day 2 picks, trading down for more picks on day 3?
I'm not even thinking about it for day 3. I think I heard Joe Shane, the Giants GM, said they had like 100 and something odd players that they had draft grades for who didn't enter the draft because of NIL and, you know, transfer portals or what have you. So the day 3, and I remember hearing Jim Nagy at the Senior Bowl talk about this too, like day 3 is pretty weak, like relative to their norm. I mean, we talk about bad drafts, but specifically day 3. So I to me, the interesting move is, if you're going to trade down from 36 or 40, do it to acquire 2025 picks. The other luxury of having the 9 picks is, let's just say for argument's sake, that you traded out of 36 and you traded out of one of your third round picks. You still have 7 in total, which is the number that every team has going into a draft. And two, if you move some of that towards 2025, now you have more assets over there as well, right? Plus, presumably, if somebody's trading up for 36, they're probably giving you their own second this year or something. So, like, this is how you have your cake and eat it too. This is where I've been trying to figure out how to get there this whole time. You know, there was part early on for me in this draft process where I'm like, okay, before free agency. All right, well, let's see. What happens if you trade down from 2? Is there still a way to get a quarterback? Could you go out and spend crazy money on Kirk Cousins or draft somebody else, whatever? But now, with knowing that they're going to take 2, which seemed obvious, I grant you, I think this is where that 36 and 40 pick become really valuable, because I think 2025 is the year to look at. This year, as Adam Peters almost said himself, we just had to get a lineup out there to go play on Sundays. And they didn't, you know, what did we see in free agency? They signed 3 guys to 3-year deals, basically. Oh, I guess 4 if you want to count Alec Gretti, but I'm not, I don't know what he is yet. So that's not about trying to win this year. They didn't go, we're all going to try to beat the Eagles and Cowboys. This is about building something, and building something means, and, you know, of course, the quarterback alone, a rookie quarterback, best case scenario, it's more just don't point to CJ Stroud. That's very atypical. So, yeah, I think that, to me, if you're trading down, to me, it's about 2025 picks.
Final question. Adam Peters this past Thursday afternoon indicated that he hoped to have a final decision on what the Commanders are doing with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft early this week. You are a three-time mock NFL draft champion as determined by the Huddle Report. You have been mocking Jaden Daniels to the Commanders lately, but when will you finalize your final mock pick for the Commanders at number two?
Well, I have a Commanders only final mock draft on The Athletic up today, Monday. I don't remember if my editor left it in or not. I said this is my final mock for this platform. I'm not saying that it won't be a final mock on my podcast or on Twitter. So realistically, I have to turn in my first round mock for the contest Wednesday sometime, whatever the deadline, midnight or 9 p.m. or something. So the answer, I guess, is then. I don't see me changing it from Jaden Daniels unless, like I said, one of these things that I am currently dismissing really blows up. Like if we start hearing, hey, out loud, not just an emoji, but out loud, he doesn't want to go to Washington, then we'll have it. Then maybe I'll have to switch. But for now, I'm going to stay with Daniels. Maybe it's wrong. Maybe it's Drake May. Maybe it's McCarthy, but I'll stay with Daniels until I see something else.
Well, we are almost at the finish line. Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic. Ben, thanks, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, man.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, if you are a Capitals fan like me, there is not much to be happy about with what happened in Game 1 of the Caps' best-of-seven series against the Metropolitan Division-winning and President's Trophy-winning New York Rangers in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. A 4-1 loss at the Rangers on Sunday afternoon. We had the Caps with their minus 37 goal differential from the just-concluded NHL regular season. The worst goal differential for an NHL playoff team in the salary cap era, which started with the 2005-2006 season. And the Caps on Sunday afternoon got ripped. The game was scoreless through the first period, but the Caps then lost the second period 3-1 as the Rangers in the second period scored three goals in a span of just 2 minutes, 6 seconds, and the Caps then lost the third period 1-0. Charlie Lindgren, our guy, the outlaw, He, of course, was the Caps' starting goaltender, but he stopped just 27 of the 31 shots on goal that he faced. Lindgren, per Natural Stat Trick, stopped just 5 of the 7 high-danger shots on goal that he faced, stopped 8 of the 9 medium-danger shots on goal that he faced, and stopped 13 of the 14 low-danger shots on goal that he faced. Lindgren was not at his best, but the Caps got hammered in the puck possession battle. They had just 21 shots on goal to the Rangers' 31, and per Natural Stat Trick had just 45 on 5 shot attempts to the Rangers' 54, including just 6 5 on 5 high danger shot attempts to the Rangers' 11. The Caps barely made the Rangers' goaltender Igor Shesterkin work. He stopped 20 of the 21 shots on goal that he faced. The Caps did go 2-2 on the penalty kill, but the Caps went 0-4 on the power play. How about the grade 8 top line left wing Alex Ovechkin? He had not only no points, but also no shots on goal. Yes, 0 shots on goal for Alex Ovechkin in game 1. Now, he did have 7 total shot attempts, but 5 of his 7 total shot attempts were blocked. This was Caps head coach Spencer Carberry during his post-game press conference on Sunday on his team's lack of offense.
Yeah, we got to do a way better job offensively. It's no secret. We struggled all year, but we've got to find ways to create more on the interior. We got to skate out of pressure. We got to keep pucks off the yellow. We continually just rim pucks around. We've got to do a better job offensively.
The Caps are not a good offensive team. They do not score many goals. We know this. And so in order for the Caps to win, they have to play really well defensively. And they, in game one, did not play really well defensively. And they only scored 1 goal. So a rather bad combination. Also, the Caps got pushed around. They got out-hit by the Rangers 31-20. The Caps' lone goal came from defenseman Martin Fehervaari. He scored an even strength goal 7:31 into the second period to cut the Caps' deficit to 3-1. But speaking of Caps defensemen, the Caps lost yet another defenseman. Defenseman Vincent Iorio, he played for just 1 minute 50 seconds. He left the game in the second period due to an upper body injury that he suffered on a hit by Rangers forward Alexi Lafreniere. Iorio got slammed hard into the sideboards and turned the puck over. The Rangers then scored on the resulting 2-on-1 with forward Artemi Panarin. The man known as the Breadman, Artemi Panarin, he beat Charlie Lindgren on a wrist shot from the right circle. Spencer Carberry, during his post-game press conference on Sunday, on the status of and the hit on Vincent Iorio.
Yeah, I'm not sure tomorrow. I'll have to figure that out tomorrow, but he didn't come back in the game. I honestly don't think it was that. It was close. It was borderline, right? He, young player, feel bad for him because he puts himself in a tough spot. Probably needs to move the puck quicker there and just get it out of his hands. And then he hangs onto it or bobbles it. So I just saw it in my feet. That's the only look, so I'll have to look at it again.
So we shall see what the status of Vincent Iorio is, but the Caps already are without multiple key defensemen. Defenseman Nick Jensen remains out due to injury that he suffered in taking a nasty hit from Tampa Bay Lightning forward Michael Essiemont in the Caps' 4-2 win over the Eastern Conference wildcard winning Lightning at Capital One Arena on April 13th. Defenseman Rasmus Sandin remains out due to an upper body injury that he suffered in the Caps 3-2 overtime loss to the Ottawa Senators at Capital One Arena on April 7th. And defenseman Ethan Bear remains out due to being in the NHL's and NHL Players Association's Player Assistance Program. Game 2 for the Caps at the Rangers Tuesday night at 7. Well, the Nationals over the weekend celebrated the 5-year anniversary of their 2019 World Series championship team as the Nats over the weekend played a 3-game series against the team that the Nats beat in the 2019 World Series, the Houston Astros. And you could say that the Nats over the weekend played a lot like that 2019 World Series championship team, as the Nats won two of three games against the Astros. Although the 2024 Nats did what the 2019 Nats did not do, beat the Astros at Nationals Park. The 2019 World Series famously included the home team losing each of the seven games in the series. Now, Friday evening, the Nats did lose to the Astros 5-3, but Saturday, the Nats outlasted the Astros 5-4 in 10 innings in a game in which the Nats blew a 2-1 seventh inning lead, but then overcame a 4-2 ninth inning deficit. And then Sunday afternoon, the Nats shut out the Astros 6-0 as the Nats, the boys, improved to 3-1 over the last four series.
I'm proud of the boys.
Yes, Nats manager Davey Martinez, he and the boys doing some work. The Nats for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 10-11. For the record, retired Nats starting pitcher and 2019 World Series MVP Steven Strasburg, he did not attend the festivities at Nationals Park over the weekend, but a current Nats starting pitcher who was in attendance was Mitchell Parker. What a job by this guy over now two major league regular season starts. The Nats took Mitchell Parker in the fifth round of the 2020 MLB draft out of San Jacinto College, a public community college in Texas. That is the same college from which the Nats drafted starting pitcher Jackson Rutledge. This season is Parker's age 24 season. He and the Nats' 6-4 win at the Los Angeles Dodgers late night this past Monday night, April 15th, made his major league regular season debut off the Nats that evening, having announced that they had recalled him from AAA Rochester. And Parker did well. Two runs in five innings. He over 81 pitches, threw 52 strikes versus 29 balls. He became the first Nats starting pitcher to register a win in his major league regular season debut since Steven Strasburg on June 8th, 2010. Well, Parker, in the Nats 6-0 win over the Astros on Sunday afternoon, was even better. He tossed seven scoreless innings with eight strikeouts versus no walks. He allowed three hits, all of which were singles. He, over his seven scoreless innings, threw just 73 pitches, a whopping 57 strikes versus just 16 balls. Mitchell Parker on Sunday afternoon dominated the Astros, who, yes, are off to a bad start. The Astros for this 2024 regular season are just 7-16. But still, the Astros have a formidable lineup. And consider this, Parker in his career in the minor leagues averaged 4.6 walks per nine innings. He, over his two major league regular season starts now, has issued zero walks. This was Davey Martinez during his post-game press conference on Sunday afternoon on Mitchell Parker, and then you'll hear multiple follow-up exchanges.
He's pounding that strike zone. He's been unbelievable. Both outings, I mean, he's really attacking the strike zone, and that's awesome.
It hasn't necessarily been his reputation in the minors. Do you sense of what he's able to do here that he didn't maybe do there?
Yeah, the biggest thing for him, even in spring training, is understand, you know, where your swings and misses are, where's the contact, right? And it's always up, down. It's never out. You know, so up down is good for him. You know, he's got a really good curveball, really good fastball. His changeup was really, really good today. Everything was over the plate. You know, so he started doing that in spring training. We started seeing him doing it, and he was lights out. You know, the big thing now is to kind of to build him up a little bit, because you know, he went four, he went five, and we pushed him to seven. I was biting my lip. You know, but I just couldn't do it to him. You know, because we need him for the long haul.
Can you talk, I guess, a little more about what specifically you saw from him in spring training that indicated this? You know, starts like this might be possible.
Yeah, his ability to pitch a top above the zone and also pitch down in the zone as well with both pitches. You know, his curveball, his fastball, and when his changeup's on, like it was today. He could be really effective. We saw him in L.A. His changeup wasn't very good, so I told him to axe it and just go curveball, fastball, and he did really well. We're just doing that, Today his changeup was good. They threw it, and he threw it very effective.
Do you start having conversations with yourself about a six-man rotation if he does keep this up?
I haven't had those conversations yet. I have a lot of conversations by myself. That ain't one of them yet. I don't want to sound crazy, but I do. but it's that hasn't come up yet. He's gonna get his next start. We hope that Josiah Gray gets healthy soon. He comes back, and then we'll have some decisions to make. But he's done so far. He's done really well.
Yes, he has. Have the Nats found a diamond in the rough in Mitchell Parker? Would be great for the Nats rebuild to answer that question with a yes, but we do have a ways to go. Another Nats starting pitcher who had a good outing in this series, Trevor Williams, who incredibly has been the Nats' best starting pitcher so far this regular season. Williams, in the 5-4, 10-inning win over the Astros on Saturday, allowed one run in six innings. He gave up just three hits, all of which were singles. He issued no walks. He recorded four strikeouts. He threw a lot of strikes, 77 pitches, 52 strikes versus just 25 balls. Trevor Williams, over four starts in this regular season, has an ERA of 2.91 and a whip of 0.97. This is the same guy who, for the 2023 regular season, over 30 starts, had an ERA of 5.55 and a whip of 1.6, which would have been the worst whip among all qualified pitchers in the majors. But Williams' lack of innings meant that he was not a qualified pitcher. Also, he, for the 2023 regular season, gave up a National League worst 34 home runs. But so far, so good for Trevor Williams, who, let's be honest, hopefully is pitching himself into being a nice trade chip for our rebuilding Nats. This season, the final season of a two-year, $13 million contract, to which the Nats signed Williams as a free agent in December 2022. The worst outing from a Nats starting pitcher in winning two or three games against the Astros over the weekend came from the Nats' most talented starting pitcher, Mackenzie Gore. He, in the 5-3 loss on Friday evening, had a very disappointing outing. He lasted for just four innings, during which he allowed three runs. He gave up seven hits, which were three doubles and four singles. He issued a walk. He did record four strikeouts, but he, over his mere four innings, threw a staggering 92 pitches, although he threw 64 strikes versus 28 balls. All three of the runs allowed by Gore came in a top of the second, in which he gave up five hits, including three consecutive doubles to begin the inning. He, in that inning, threw 37 pitches. The Nats, in winning two or three games over the Astros over the weekend, were not great offensively, but the Nats so far this regular season have been, I would say, competent offensively. And that's really due to four guys. Shortstop C.J. Abrams, outfielder Jesse Winker, second baseman Luis Garcia Jr., and catcher Riley Adams. Those four guys have been the Nats' best hitters so far this regular season. Abrams' OPS is 1,034. Winker's OPS is 946. Garcia's OPS is 824. And Adams' OPS is 863. The guy who's been the best, though, is C.J. Abrams, who is blossoming into a star. Take a listen to the work of C.J. Abrams in this series against the Astros. The 5-3 loss to the Astros on Friday evening, Abrams, as an at starting shortstop and number two batter, went 1-for-4 with a triple. He and an at's one-run ninth had a leadoff full-count triple to the right center field gap to conclude an 8-pitch plate appearance against Astros closer Josh Hader. The 5-4, 10-inning win over the Astros on Saturday, Abrams, as the Nats starting shortstop and number one batter, went 2-for-5 with a solo homer and a double. He did commit a missed catch error, but Abrams, in an Nats one-run first, hit a first-pitch leadoff homer to right field to tie the game at one. The homer went a projected 405 feet per Statcast, and Abrams, in an Nats two-run ninth, had a first-pitch double off the right center field wall. And then the 6-0 win over the Astros on Sunday afternoon, Abrams, as the Nats starting shortstop and number one batter, went 1-for-4 with a single and a walk. He did strike out twice, but he hit a Nats 3-run first, had a leadoff single to center field on a 1-2 pitch and a steal of second base. And Abrams, in a Nats 2-run fifth, drew a walk. C.J. Abrams for this regular season has an on-base percentage of .358 and a slugging percentage of .676. Outstanding. I mentioned Jesse Winker, a huge hit for him in that 5-4 10-inning win over the Astros on Saturday. Winker was the Nats' starting left fielder and number two batter. He and that Nats, a two-run ninth, had a game-tying two-run single to center field on an 0-2 pitch to tie the game at four. Luis Garcia Jr., he was the Nats' starting second baseman in each of the three games in the series. The 5-3 loss to the Astros on Friday evening, Garcia as the Nats' number five batter, went 1-for-3 with a single and a walk, and he had a stolen base. The 5-4 10-inning win over the Astros on Saturday, Garcia as the Nats' number four batter, went 1-for-5 with a single. And then the 6-0 win over the Astros on Sunday afternoon, Garcia as the Nats' number four batter, went 3-for-4 with a two-run single and two other singles. Andy had a stolen base. Garcia in the Nats' three-run first had a full count, two-run single to center field for a 3-0 Nats lead. And Riley Adams, he was the Nats' starting catcher and number eight batter in each of the three games in the series, with catcher K-Bert Ruiz on the 10-day injured list with influenza. The 5-3 loss to the Astros on Friday evening, Adams went 2-for-3 with a solo homer and a double. The 5-4 10-inning win over the Astros on Saturday, Adams went 0-for-2, but with an RBI sack fly and a walk. And the 6-0 win over the Astros on Sunday afternoon, Adams went 1-for-3 with a single and a walk. He's doing a really good job with K-Bert Ruiz out. Also, with the Nats offense over the weekend, signs of life from Joey Meneses. He and the 5-3 loss to the Astros on Friday evening as the Nats starting first baseman and number six batter went 0-for-4, dropping his OPS plus for this regular season to just 39, which is horrendous. OPS plus is OPS that is adjusted for a player's league and home ballpark. 100 is average. Below 100 is bad. Above 100 is good. An OPS plus of 39 is really bad. But then came the final two games of the series. The 5-4 10-inning win over the Astros on Saturday, Meneses, as the Nats starting DH and number six batter, went 3-for-5 with a walk-off RBI single and two other singles. So Meneses in the bottom of the 10th, a walk-off leadoff first pitch RBI single off the right center field warning track for a 5-4 Nats win. And the 6-0 win over the Astros on Sunday afternoon, Meneses as the Nats starting first baseman and number five batter went 2-for-4 with a two-run single and an infield single. He and a Nats two-run fifth had a two-out bases loaded opposite field two-run single to shallow right field for a 5-0 Nats lead. Hopefully, Joey Meneses finally is getting going. And then with the Nats bullpen in winning two or three games against the Astros over the weekend, the bullpen was good in games one and three, but not good in game two. The 6-0 win on Sunday afternoon, two Nats combined for two scoreless innings. Dylan Floro tossed a perfect top of the eighth. Matt Barnes tossed a scoreless top of the ninth. The 5-3 loss on Friday evening, five Nats relievers combined to allow two runs in five innings. But the 5-4 10-inning win on Saturday, the Nats won that game despite five Nats relievers combining to allow three runs in four innings. Robert Garcia was charged with two runs without recording it out. Hunter Harvey in an Astros two-run seventh faced four batters, got three outs, but he gave up a one-out RBI single by Jeremy Pena to left field for a 3-2 Astros lead. Jordan Weems allowed a run in the top of the eighth on two singles and a walk, but Tanner Rainey did toss a scoreless top of the ninth. And Kyle Finnegan in the top of the 10th faced two batters and got three outs on just seven pitches as he induced a one-out fly ball by the Astros number three batter Alex Bregman in right field foul territory, where the ball was caught by right fielder Lane Thomas, and he then unleashed a great throw to throw out Jose Altuve on a tag-up play at home plate. You know, Lane Thomas is not having a good season offensively. His OPS for this regular season is just .497, but that outfield assist that he had in the top of the 10th on Saturday was huge. No game for the Nats on Monday. Next up for them is a three-game series against the Los Angeles Dodgers at Nationals Park. Game one, Tuesday evening at 6:45. Patrick Corbin will be the Nats starting pitcher. Game two, Wednesday evening at 6:45. Jake Irvin will be the Nats starting pitcher. And game three, Thursday afternoon at 4:05. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So we last segment talked about the Nationals, who via a shutout win on Sunday afternoon improved to 3-1 over their last four series. Well, the Orioles via a shutout win on Sunday afternoon improved to 3-1 over their last four series. The O's over the weekend won two of three games at the Kansas City Royals. Friday night, a 9-4 loss at the Royals, but Saturday night, a 9-7 win at the Royals in a game in which the O's scored seven runs in the top of the second and then held on for the win. And then Sunday afternoon, a 5-0 win at the Royals as the O's, Joe Angel, again, were in the win column.
And the Orioles, again, in the win column.
Yes, Joe, the win column. The O's for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 14-7. More good work by the Orioles offense. The O's, in their 5-0 win at the Royals on Sunday afternoon, scored five runs, totaled 11 hits, worked three walks, and went 3-for-12 with runners in scoring position. The 11 hits were made up of two home runs, two triples, two doubles, and five singles. Colton Cowser, the milkman. He, as the Orioles starting left fielder and number seven batter, went 1-for-3 with a solo homer and a walk. He hit Orioles a two-run third, had a leadoff homer on a bomb to right center field for a 1-0 Orioles lead. The homer went a projected 430 feet per Statcast. And then homering right after Cowser was Jordan Westberg. He is the Orioles starting third baseman and number eight batter, went 2-for-3 with a solo homer, a triple, and a bases loaded walk. Westberg in that Orioles two-run third had a solo homer on a bomb to left center field for a 2-0 Orioles lead. The homer went a projected 433 feet per Statcast. Colton Cowser and Jordan Westberg, the Orioles' numbers 7 and 8 batters on Sunday afternoon. Cowser for this regular season has an OPS of 1,195. Westberg for this regular season has an OPS of 1,031. And again, those guys were the Orioles' numbers 7 and 8 batters on Sunday afternoon to give you a sense of how loaded with young talent the Orioles are. The 9-7 win at the Royals on Saturday night, the O's in that game were excellent offensively. They scored nine runs, including seven runs in the top of the second. The O's on Saturday night totaled 15 hits, which were comprised of six doubles and nine singles. The O's on Saturday night worked three walks. The O's on Saturday night went a stellar 7-for-16 with runners in scoring position. Anthony Santander, he on Saturday night as the Orioles starting right fielder and number four batter, 3-for-5 with three doubles. He had two RBI doubles and another double. And Santander, in the bottom of the ninth, made a terrific defensive play, a diving forward underhanded catch of a liner off the bat of the Royals' number two batter, Bobby Witt Jr., for the first out. Even in the Orioles' lone loss in this series, the 9-4 loss on Friday night, the O's in that game, four runs, eight hits, three walks, did go just 2-for-10 with runners in scoring position, but the eight hits included a grand slam to go with a double and six singles. Adley Rutschman, he on Friday night as the Orioles starting catcher and number two batter, 3-for-5 with a grand slam, and two singles. He ended Orioles 4-run seventh, hit a two-out grand slam to left field to cut the Orioles' deficit to 6-4. But still struggling is the consensus number one prospect in baseball, Jackson Holliday. He and the 5-0 win at the Royals on Sunday afternoon as the Orioles starting second baseman and number 9 batter went 0-for-3 with a walk. So Holliday now, since being promoted from AAA Norfolk on April 10th, is 1-for-30 with a single and two walks. I would not demote Jackson Holliday. I'd like to see him play his way through this, but man, he is struggling something fierce. There's no doubt about that. Nice to see starting pitcher Cole Irvin do as he did in that 5-0 win at the Royals on Sunday afternoon. Irvin was truly good for the first time in 4 starts in this regular season. He tossed 6 2/3 scoreless innings. He gave up just 4 hits, which were a double and 3 singles. He issued 2 walks. He did record just 2 strikeouts. He threw 93 pitches, 58 strikes versus 35 balls. O's manager Brandon Hyde, during his postgame session with reporters on Sunday, on Cole Irvin, who the O's got by a trade with the Oakland A's in January 2023.
That's definitely the best start he's had since we got him last year. He's just the way he changed speeds, moved the ball around, pitched the contact. We played well defensively behind him. It was working ahead in the count, and this is probably his best changeup he's had since he's been here for me, and it was a start we needed.
Yes, it was, and this was the best outing by an Orioles starting pitcher in this series. The 9-7 win at the Royals on Saturday night, the ace, Corbin Burnes, was just so-so. He allowed 3 runs in 5 2/3 innings. He gave up just 4 hits, but one of them was a 3-run homer to the final batter he faced. A 2-out 3-run homer by Salvador Perez to left field in the bottom of the 6th to cut the Orioles' lead to 7-3. Burnes also gave up a double and 2 singles. He issued a walk. He recorded 4 strikeouts. He threw a lot of pitches, but also a lot of strikes. 98 pitches, but 62 strikes versus 36 balls. And consider this, the O's in this regular season now are 5-0 in games started by Corbin Burnes. That is an ace. And then the 9-4 loss at the Royals on Friday night, Dean Kramer was just so-so. He officially allowed 3 runs in 5 2/3 innings. Now, he only gave up 2 hits, which were a solo homer and a double, but he issued 3 walks. He recorded just 3 strikeouts, and he threw a lot of balls, 91 pitches, just 50 strikes versus 41 balls. Also problematic for the O's in this series was their bullpen. Now, the bullpen was good in the 5-0 win at the Royals on Sunday afternoon as 3 Orioles relievers, Jacob Webb, Danny Coulomb, and Dylan Tate, combined for 2 1/3 scoreless innings with 3 strikeouts. But the bullpen in games 1 and 2 of the series was bad. The 9-4 loss at the Royals on Friday night, 3 Orioles relievers officially combined to allow 6 runs in 2 1/3 innings. Keegan Aiken allowed 3 runs in 1/3 of an inning. He had a Royals 5-run 6, faced 5 batters, but got just 1 out. Dylan Tate allowed 3 runs in the bottom of the 7th. He gave up 4 hits, including a 2-out first pitch 3-run homer by MJ Melendez on a moonshot to right field for a 9-4 Royals lead. The homer went a projected 424 feet per Statcast and prompted quite the bat flip from MJ Melendez. Mike Bauman did toss a perfect bottom of the 8th with 2 swinging strikeouts. And the 9-7 win at the Royals on Saturday night, 6 Orioles relievers combined to allow 4 runs in 3 1/3 innings. Danny Coulomb, Johan Ramirez, and Yennier Cano, they combined to allow 4 runs in 1 1/3 innings. Those 3 relievers combined to allow 4 runs in the bottom of the 7th. But Keegan Aiken and Mike Bauman combined for a scoreless bottom of the 8th. And Craig Kimbrell tossed a perfect bottom of the 9th for the save. His 422nd career Major League regular season save, tying Billy Wagner for number 7 in MLB history in career regular season saves. Now, there was some drama with the actual baseball with which Kimbrell got the save. Left fielder Colton Cowser caught a fly ball to end the game, but then chucked the ball into the fountain at Kauffman Stadium, but the ball was ultimately retrieved. So the O's in this series, far from perfect in a variety of ways, and yet they still won two or three games at a Royals team that is having a good season. The Royals came into this series 12-7 in this regular season. Next up for the O's, the three-game series at the Los Angeles Angels. Game one, late night on Monday night at 9:38. Albert Suarez will be the Orioles starting pitcher. Game two, late night on Tuesday night at 9:38. Grayson Rodriguez will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And game three, Wednesday afternoon at 4:07. Dean Kramer will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Tuesday show, episode 811. We'll have plenty for you on the Commanders. Also on Tuesday show, I'll talk Orioles as they are at the Los Angeles Angels late night on Monday night at 9:38 for game one of a three-game series. Have a great rest of your Monday, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Ha, ha, ha.